So I listened to a episode of from one of my favorite theologian, Dr. Kate Fowler's podcast, and she was interviewing an expert on teenage mental health. And that interview stuck in my brain, and I've been mulling over it, what they talked about, ever since. And it might at first seem unrelated to saints and puzzle pieces to start, but bear with me. In the episode and in her book, The Emotional Lives of Teenagers, Dr. Lisa Demmer offers a definition of mental health that's a bit different from the mainstream cultural discourse she often hears, but a whole lot closer to what mental health professionals and academics need when they talk about wellness. Mental health is, one, having feelings that fit the situation even if they're not pleasant feelings, and two, managing those feelings effectively, that is, coping in a way that brings relief and does no harm. And she says this is a more reassuring definition of mental health because it does not hinge on the idea that you can get to a place of feeling good and stay there. That has never been on the menu, she says. It doesn't need to be on the menu. It is much more about how we handle the vicissitudes of life. Emotional distress, anxiety, sadness, anger is actually a sign of mental well-being. If you are living through something scary, saddening, and unjust, if those feelings fit the moment and the circumstance you're facing, the real work is building up the resiliency to be fully in all that rage and grief and hurt and come out the other side whole. Dr. Demmer wisely notes the skills involved in this perseverance often don't actually mean intensely turning inward. They're often actually about what she says. We want to feel better. It's often actually about thinking about what other people need, caring for others, and making oneself of use. Caring for others and making oneself of use. I think the reason this stuck with me is that this is kind of contemporary mental health language for a much more ancient teaching, one we know well, but definitely benefit from being reminded of often. Spiritual wholeness is not about pleasant feelings, nor wealth, nor accolades, nor any sort of earthly success. On this All Saints Day, we remember how the lives of the saints teach us our true goal, that at the end of our lives, we can authentically say we lived a life imbued with faith and hope and love in service to God and others, that God might say to us in the end, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Jesus teaches, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you who mourn, for you will be comforted. Honored are you who are humble, who don't seek to have power over others. Honored are you who long for a better world, who are honest and true in your convictions, who risk it all for peace and justice. Blessed are you who are in it right now, living it." When we read the stories of the saints closely, we see how they went unrecognized, unvalued, without honor while they were alive. They were deliberately poor, staunchly unpopular, and took controversial stances. The traditional saints, including all of the apostles, met terrible ends at the hands of those in power. They were celebrated and canonized only in death. "Your reward is great in heaven," Jesus promises. Yet even in all their suffering and persecution, the saints are illumined with an unparalleled clarity of purpose. Their lives are defined by caring for others and making themselves of use. They were about doing good, not feeling good. Getting to a point of feeling good and staying there is not what walking in the way of the cross has ever been about. Mental health is a deeply important topic right now, especially for teenagers, especially in the wake of COVID isolation and the aftershocks of mass shooting after mass shooting, in the face of climate and environmental despair. I am not a mental health expert, nor should I ever pretend to be. I'm the first person to say, turn to a mental health professional, get the medication you need. And at the same time, I am paying close attention to how much the very real mental health crisis in this country also overlaps with a spiritual crisis. It is so important to say, in the wake of something like Lewiston, Maine, that mental illness does not cause violence, that millions of Americans suffer from mental illness every year, but would never in a million years hurt someone with a gun, hurt someone at all. What we have here is a spiritual crisis. What we have here is when the framework of violence and subjugation, the way that we teach powerfulness, becomes a spiritual issue. When we see around that hopelessness and loneliness and hatred of self and others are harming us, I also see a spiritual crisis. When I see so many Americans dying deaths of despair and loneliness at the hands of those who dehumanize them, these deaths speak to a profound sense of powerlessness and disconnection. So how do we find our way to lives imbued with faith and hope and love? We start by remembering that strong negative emotions can be signs of mental and spiritual health, that some unpleasant feelings can actually lead us toward faith and hope and love. Your capacity for grief is directly related to your capacity for love. It is your capacity for love. And your capacity for love, your willingness to reach out for connection again, is your way through to wholeness once more. The depth of your anger is directly related to your hope for justice and peace. It is your hope for justice and peace. And your hope for justice and peace, your courage to fight for the world as it should be, is your way, our way, to a healed world. And the intensity of your fear is directly related to your ability to care about outcomes. It can become your ability to hold on and have faith if you let go not of the caring, but of the control. We start by caring for others and making ourselves of use. We connect our gifts to others' needs. We offer ourselves back to God. Caring for others and making ourselves of use aren't how we prove we are worthy of love. It's how we remember and remind each other. This is where the puzzle pieces come in. If you all got a puzzle piece when you came in, if you didn't, there's some more back in the hall. You are going to finish the sermon today. All this month, we've been reflecting on the gifts God has given us to give away, our skills, abilities, passions, talents, and resources. Today is about connecting those gifts to opportunities here at St. Mark's and our local communities. And hopefully you've gotten a booklet, too, that looks like this. This will give you ways and ideas of how to care for others, how to make yourself of use, perhaps even how to find a clarity of purpose that will steady you in difficult or turbulent times. So in a moment, you're going to be invited to think and pray about how you'd like to commit your gifts to God's service at St. Mark's this next year. Now, it's quite possible you're already connected in and doing all you can. And in that case, name and claim those ways on your puzzle piece. Take a moment to fill out your puzzle piece. Put your name on it so heads of ministries can reach back out to you to help you figure out how to live out your commitments. And at the end of the service, we're all going to put the puzzle pieces together. We'll see quite colorfully how the giving of our gifts connects us one to each other, to our neighbor, and to God. The puzzle will be incomplete, and that's very intentional. This project of creating connection, finding our purpose, is in itself a profoundly needed gift we have to offer a lonely, despairing, and hurting world. So take a moment now to find a puzzle piece, a pen, and a booklet, if you don't already have them, and fill out your puzzle piece to finish the sermon.